big hello to everybody who's listening. Hope you're all staying well and taking care of your families too. Straight from the horse's mouth. Well, I'm sure you would have heard this phrase earlier, and this episode is going to be a testament to that, for you're now going to understand everything about post-pandemic chronic management right from an expert. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Aishwarya, your host, and I'm glad to have Mr. Dinesh Varadarajan, Vice President of Product Management at Tisflow Inc. Dinesh has got a wonderful career trajectory, and he's here to share with us some of his experiences contributing to building products. Hi, Dinesh. It's wonderful to speak to you today.
Thanks, Aishwarya. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me in the show. Hopefully, we are going to have a few Q&As, and my answers is going to help you in planning for this crisis as well, right? How to manage your product management during this crisis.
Definitely. And we are most forward, looking forward to it.
Sure.
And okay, so why don't we speak about your journey into product management, a software engineer into VP? I think that isn't an easy feat. So could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I am a landscaper for more than 15 years now. Right? Mm-hmm. So when we started, we were like hardcore engineers who believe like complex problems and beautiful code will make a product successful, right?
Yeah.
And we believed in that for the first 10 years of existence. And it took significant time for us to understand that we need strong UI UX knowledge and mm-hmm. someone to take care of product management as such as, but not along with engineering, right? Mm. So yeah. I have to say it's a very, very slow realization for us. When we realized this problem, someone from the core team need to cross the bridge and see it from the other side, right? Mm-hmm. So Suresh, my CEO, actually pushed me to it. Probably he saw a sliver of hope in me as PM, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. The last 7 years, we're able to understand it much better and believe that reflects in the success of the product as well.
Yeah. So I think it's good to see how a mentor has, pushed you into seeing the whole picture. And what you stated is so true. To be product managers, you need to understand different aspects of the product. And software engineering is one aspect of it. Definitely, I think UI, UX and marketing and all the other aspects come into place. And it's good to see that somebody helped you take that leap to see the whole picture, connect the dots and bring in success to the product that you're working for.
Yeah, that's like we started in 2004, right? Even uh-huh. before the product management is like what it is right now.
Yes, and, so true, yeah.
Again, the B2B products, it's not more about like UI, UX during the early days as well, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we had an IP in Rule Engine and we believed that we can actually democratize computing with our invention. So we mm-hmm. continuously created products which are like fairly sophisticated, but that actually lacks the UI UX finesse that we normally see nowadays, right? So for us, it's like we need to reinvent every time, understand mm-hmm. why the products are not successful, right? And slowly we understood why the design is important. We understood how we should talk to the customer, get their feedback and make it simple, right? That's one of the learnings that we actually implemented when we started Tisflow as a product, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a long journey.
Good to know about the journey. And I loved when you stated experimentation, because I think that's a very powerful word in itself, because it involves that the iterative approach is going to help all of us who are working in the product space to understand things that are otherwise not clearly visible. And those give us the more learnings that we need to build, create and market great products.
Yeah.
So very true what you had stated. And talking about these different aspects that are involved in getting a product out or, in fact, getting a product and keeping it more functioning, how do you think remote working has influenced the way that product teams function, especially because the core work that aids in building, marketing or designing the product, how has it been to create and manage all of this remotely?
The journey started long back for us, right? Even before the crisis, we mm-hmm. invested significant effort in building the right culture inside the organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Many of you know we are bootstrapped. So we want to make sure that we are getting like superstars inside the organization and who actually believe in helping each other to become successful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we take humongous pride in how we operate even before the crisis, right? And as I said, we believe in collective functioning of an organization instead of a top-down approach. So what we did is we created like independent teams that can function on their own, right? So every product team has a product owner. It's not a typical agile product owner, right? Product owner is the stakeholder here, right? For every team, they're like a product owner who manages the team and like a few, one or two product managers, tech leads, front and back end engineers, QA, UI, UX, and content teams. They're all part of the team, right? And this is the close-knit team that we created even before the crisis. They talk to each other. And they're 80% independent. They can actually do everything without depending on other teams, right? So we pretty much organize all the modules, all the components, so that these teams can function independently. We made this change probably a year back. It's not even a year, I guess, like 6 to 9 months back. And it actually helped, it's helping us during the crisis, because these teams are like different locations, fairly smaller teams. They can take decisions on their own. They can move forward on their own, right? With very less dependency on other teams. And similarly, we have an equivalent team inside the marketing team as well. And these two teams always work together, right? So if you look at anyone's calendar, pretty much like out of 9 hours, 6 to 7 hours, they work within the team, right? Continue always connected to doing like either chat or a meeting. Solve issues. They coordinate their work, talking to each other, and that is actually helping us during this crisis as well. I would rather say that the productivity is like 30 to 40% higher than at office, because they are not spending time traveling to and fro from office as well, right? And the coffee breaks are looks like it's fairly small right now, because lunchtime coffee breaks and people are very, very happy because they are working from their native, right? And no pressure on them. They are managing their work, and this is working beautifully for us.
Yeah, so good to know that. I think it's more like this creative freedom that's thrust upon each of us working from remote locations and getting to do things at our own pace. And when you explain all of this to me, I couldn't help but think of this particular quote that they say, a company is only as good as the people who make it. So I think what you told when you mentioned about collective functioning and how people take that effort to combine all of their work and keep themselves informed and always help each other out and encourage each other, I think that is what really makes a company of the whole culture and the way it is known for its products. So that was beautifully brought out when you explained to me how did Kissflow take that up as a challenge and how did it actually bust the whole thing. And right now, even before the pandemic times, Kissflow is ready to accommodate people working independently, but again, bringing into a collective ecosystem. So it's like Lego pieces connected together to make a whole framework.
Yeah, the organization is nothing but like a set of Lego pieces, right? So top down will never work, and that's what we believed in for a very long time. And luckily, we are ready when the crisis hit us, right? So
true. Yeah, I think coming from a company that also does not follow the top down approach, I think I could definitely second you with that. So I stumbled upon an article where you spoke about the WINES framework, like WINES, a model for prioritizing product features. I absolutely loved reading about it and would also like the listeners to know about the same. So could you share that approach with us?
Sure, I will. See, WINES framework work when you have a stable product, right? Like used by like thousands of customers, like at least not thousands, even hundreds of customers. But the product, you are continuously adding new features to the product, right? Look at any organization, pretty much all the feature requests come from two departments. The one from the sales, because they want to sell to more customers, expand the market. And the next set of feature requests come from customer success teams, because existing customers want new features, right? Because they are solving new problems with the product as well, right? So like we are continuously solving the sales and the customer success needs. But after some time, we realized we are not actually adding any futuristic features to the product, because we are always catering to the needs of sales and the customer success teams, right? Only then we created this framework called WINES. In WINES, W is for winner, features that are strategic in nature, that will actually make the product positioning better, right? It's about leapfrogging the competitors, right? So the leadership team or the product leadership team owns the W bucket, right?
Okay.
They talk to each other. I actually align to the organizational strategy aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these are the important features. These features may not be urgent, but these are very, very important for the product roadmap. The I stands for invisible, right? Pretty much mm-hmm. all the non-touch functional requirements of the product. This bucket is owned by the engineering team.
Okay.
Could be improving the performance or changing the backend infrastructure or introducing a caching system, because we'll never get time to make any of the changes to the product because they're always bombarded with requests from the customer success or the sales team. So we want them to give a bucket so they can actually prioritize all the non-functional features of the product as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next one is needs. It's quite obvious. It's the needs of the existing customers. So this is from the customer success team. We have an internal framework called Wishlist where all the customers go and request for new features, right? And the customer success team actually collates all the requests and prioritize the requests, and they own this bucket. They actually put features into this bucket, all right? The next one is our experience. This is for UI and UX folks because, of course, we can continuously improve the product, and we have session recordings they continuously go through. And when the end users are struggling with a particular feature or a page, they go and redesign the page, and experience is for experiences for them. So they actually add all the UI UX improvement into that bucket. That is easy, right? The last one is from the sales team. All the features because of which the customers are not buying our product are part of this bucket, right? The sales says, if you give this feature, I can probably close another $100,000 deal, right? So all these things come into the bucket. So before starting any product release cycle, we go through this bucket. We make sure that we pick features from all these buckets as part of the release cycle.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So it is like evenly balanced. Without this clarity, we end up always picking items only from sellers and needs, either for the sales team or from the customer success team. And deprioritize everything that are very, very important as well, right?
Yeah.
So now, like when the product is stable, of course, you can actually follow all these things. But even now, we are not following vines because we are developing new set of products. When you're developing something new, W takes the front seat, right? So it's more strategic in nature. You may have to even negotiate on the sales members to protect your future as well. Right, so you might even say to the customer that we won't be able to do this feature, even if it means that you are losing those deals, because we are working on something that is very, very strategic in nature.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So this framework is just to give us the clarity about how we are operating as an organization, right?
Fair enough. Yeah, yeah. So I think I'm reminded of this Eisenhower matrix framework of sorts, because what I absolutely love in this framework is how people take ownership. Like, you know, you assign one bucket to each of them, which gives them the sort of the feeling that each of them has like a wish list, and together you collectively combine the wish list and take what is the right approach for the product overall. So, you know, leveraging each other's skills, and at the same time, knowing that you can't have priority or, you know, like a specific weightage or a bias only to say the sales or the customer success teams, because they are the people facing teams, but instead it's the responsibility is sort of shared across. And I think you can change propositions, as you just said, like when you're working on a new product, there is one thing that takes a little precedence over the other. But I can see what you absolutely mean by bringing a balance and a clarity within the team that's working on the product features.
Yeah, just the roadmap is not the product management team is not the only one that owns the roadmap, right? As I said, it's a collective.
Yeah, totally.
Moving ahead as an organization, and everyone has a say in how the product is progressing as well, right? So having the frameworks actually helps us in doing that.
Totally. I think I'm so glad that you mentioned the point on the roadmap owning, because I've seen a lot of people think that it's only like one particular team, and specifically only the product leadership team that can actually have a say with product roadmap. But I guess each of them, like each avenue of the product, the people working towards these avenues have partly responsibility in framing that whole roadmap. So thanks for mentioning that point, Dinesh. So the present pandemic has laid an impact on almost everything, like from the nation's economy to even our day-to-day affairs. And not to leave out, many small businesses are affected deeply, and some of them are even withdrawing their subscriptions, the product subscriptions, due to the lack of support. So as a VP of product management, what are some simple empathetic measures that you would take to handle this extending situation? I'm just asking you so that it could be, loud and people could understand from your experience, how would a person like you deal with this and take inspiration from that?
Yeah, it's like, as I said, this crisis is hitting the SMBs really hard, right? Mm-hmm. So because it's about their survival, and we understand that, and we are very, very closely connected to pretty much all our customers, especially our customer success team, right? So they're continuously conversing with pretty much all the customers, and it is based on the case-to-case basis. We don't have a formula set for all the customers, because every customer is different. How they use the product is different. The problem they are facing is different as well. But we are very, very empathetic towards their needs, and it's about reducing subscriptions or not paying the subscription for a few months. The team is taking all the calls. They are empowered to take those calls without even talking to any of us, right? Mm-hmm. So they talk to the customer, they take the call, even to suspend the subscription, and like in the sense they can still use the product, but they don't have to pay for next 3 months or 4 months. All those decisions are taken.
Okay.
As I said, case by case basis. We don't have a set formula for all the customers.
Okay. So I think at the end of the day, like you understand what situation that they are in and sort of give them relief support and personal assistance.
Yeah, it's not about managing the subscription, mm-hmm. right? Because that is about building a long-term relationship with our customers. Yeah. They are the champions, because of which they are referring to other customers. And literally, Kisplo, many of the businesses are running based on Kisplo, mm-hmm. right? We don't want to lose even a single one of them. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we are part of their journey in this crisis as well, and supporting them as much as possible, more than managing the subscription.
Yeah. So,
right?
Yeah.
Even if about working with them, helping them developing new applications to manage, we are part of pretty much the whole journey now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. The building relationships part is where the core of SaaS and the core of products like Kisplo and all of these are, focusing on. So, that is a very, very valid point. I'm sure you would have spent time mentoring a lot of product teams and professionals, and I could clearly see that in the talk that we had now. So what's the most often quoted question to you, and what was the biggest takeaway that you gave to people who asked you those questions?
Okay. This is interesting, because when product managers build features, mm-hmm. right, and the product managers who joined us in the last 2-3 years,
yeah,
right, they normally evaluate all the competitors, which is actually very good, but they also get inspiration from the features that are in the competitor products, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we believe that every product is different, and our customer profiles are different as well. Right, we don't have competitors in our space, the exact competitor in our space, right? So we should actually keep tab on all the competitors, but we should never copy features from our competitors, because we don't know mm-hmm. why they created those features and who are using those features as well.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Without that, without intrinsically understanding the problem, if you create or copy anything from them, we are actually designing the product wrongly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when you actually hit a problem, go and intensively understand the problem and then create a solution from the scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that can actually make the product successful. Don't ever copy the features from the competitor.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that I always quote to my team, because that's always very easy. You can always say they are doing this and this for the same problem, they actually have a different solution. Right.
Yeah.
And when the product is also very successful, the competitor product is also very successful, you always believe they are right as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know the thought process behind it. That is very, very important point for all the product managers, because we are always biased with what our competitor does, which may not be right all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
That for sure is true. I think your audience, specifically for your product, is going to be completely different from what competitors' audiences are. I mean, there is definitely an overlap, but as you said, the problem that you are solving has your own unique solution than what it is to copy from a competitor who's offering the same product. So you've got the point very clear there, and I hope the listeners also understand, because this is the most often asked question. You rightly picked out the question for this answer, because a lot of people ask this question, like, hey, I know my competitor is doing this, but do I have to go and make sure that the same thing is available in my product as well? So you were just straight on point there and answering that question asked by a lot of other people.
Yeah, thank you, Ashura.
So I'm curious to know what you most believe in. By this time, I sort of guess, but I would, you know, like to know from you directly. So, you know, this is the thing that I pose to you. Growing big, but still having individual startup-like frameworks within your company, or growing big and have exponential process or structural changes being made with every such move? Which one do you most believe in?
Yeah, of course, the first one. Mm-hmm. We believe in a team of teams.
Yeah, right? I think I was right there.
Yeah, like a smaller autonomous teams contributing to the greater vision of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we are actually blessed with good people, and we want them to run the show instead of process running them, right?
True.
Because process believes in least common denominator. It believes everyone is same, right? When you actually put a rule for everyone to adhere to, then actually believes everyone is same. And we believe everyone is different. Everyone is smart and good as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we rather want them to run the show. We don't actually believe as a process. Process can be a guardrail, right?
Yeah.
It can actually help you from driving down the cliff. It stops there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But you should drive the car.
Very
because
true.
You know the direction, and we actually believe in it as an organization.
I think that was a perfect anecdote, and you know, nothing that I need to add to it, because it was just driving the whole point of people were over the process.
Yeah, that helps us a lot. And we actually live a very, very happy life inside the organization. Mm-hmm. And that's what is very important when you spend like close to 70% of your time every day at office,
so
right?
True. Yeah.
So we believe in having good people around who actually takes care of us, care of the organization as we do, right? And that is actually helping us really well.
Very good. I'm so happy to hear that from you, and good to see that Kisflow is having such a structure and people are all coordinated, and that was really reflecting from all of the answers that we were discussing today. As we come to conclude this session, let's have some fun time with a quick rapid fire. So I would go on and ask you four questions, one after the other, and you should give me like a quick answer.
Sure.
Okay, so the first one, your craziest dream since childhood.
Okay, time machine, easy answer for me. Right.
Wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I love anthropology. Mm-hmm. Right? So, I want to go back in time and witness different time periods.
Yeah.
How we evolved as humans. And those things, I really love those. And I want to actually go back and see everywhere I go, actually want to see how that place, the humans who live out there, mm-hmm. like 1,000 mm-hmm. years back, 1,000 years back.
Mm-hmm. I sense you're a historian then, like, you know, sort of a little interest into history and the values, or, you know, the culture that makes up a place as well.
Yeah, yeah. Love history.
I would like to team up with you on that for sure.
Sure.
So the next one, one dish that you cook really well for your family.
I became a chef in the last 2 months, like everyone else, right? Pretty much cooked everything. But the kids loved my biryani because I am from
that's nice.
E-road, right?
Uh-huh.
We actually cook it differently,
uh-huh.
and used to cook it for the last few weeks, and they love it. Less spicy.
That's nice. That's nice. And coming from the kids, saying that it's very good is such an appreciation. So good to know that. So the next one, binge read or binge watch? Which person are you?
Read. Especially Audible, because the whole organization is continuously tuned towards Audible, right? So we need to share a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I actually follow a routine. I listen one biography, books on psychology. I love history, as I said.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As well, right? So it's like a cycle. I listen to one biography and some book on psychology and history, anthropology, astronomy. It's like a cycle.
Wow, interesting. And the last one for you today is your favorite fictional character. It could be books, movies, or any TV series.
Very, very bad in it because I don't want to watch movies.
Okay.
And I don't read fictional books as well.
Okay.
But one character is probably Morpheus from Matrix. I don't know if you know it.
Yes, yeah.
The whole movie as well for you. Right. So Morpheus is one thing probably. Because during my college days, I used to have my email ID as Morpheus. So,
Oh, that's nice.
That
a fun fact along with it.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dinesh. The whole conversation was very interesting and very vivacious for me as well while hosting it. And I took down a lot of notes from this whole conversation. It was good to see how is it to see the whole product journey from a VP's position. At the same time, you also made sure how each person in the company takes ownership of things and how this entire structure is possible only because of great coordination. So, thanks once again for spending your time and sharing so much knowledge with us in this session.
Yeah, thanks, Aishwarya. It's a wonderful conversation. Thank you for that. And very, very interesting questions as well.
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad you liked it, Dinesh.
Yeah. Stay safe.
Yeah. See you then. Bye-bye.